From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Gamin in the final furlong, now at the 16th pole. Gamin, John Velasquez, rolling on home to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. All Gamin.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner in the Filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose. All the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish.
Here's Whitmore striding forward for the lead in the final furlong of the Breeders' Cup Sprint. What a day in the career of this seven-year-old. Whitmore, Erod Ortiz Jr. have won the Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the show that, quite frankly, started it all. The show that launched a network, as we like to say. Mike Pennant, Baron in the Backstretch, with you for the next couple of hours, right up until 10 a.m. Eastern. You, of course, are listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or digitally with our live streaming or podcast of the show on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you along for the next couple of hours. 133 days, 9 hours, 43 minutes, and wait for it, 5 seconds until the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 1st, Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. And did you know there have already been 14 Kentucky Derby prep races run in 2020? 14. You might have missed that. 8 in the United States, 6 internationally. The most recent was yesterday afternoon, and you may not have been paying attention because it was a Friday, and it was at Remington Park in Oklahoma, but there was a Derby points race run yesterday. And Senor Buscador, which by the way means Sir Seeker, was seeking to remain perfect in his young career, and he did just that in winning the Springboard Mile, earning 10 points toward a spot in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May. He'll need a lot more than that, and the waters will get much deeper for Senor Buscador. But the son of Mineshaft is now a perfect 2-for-2 to begin this young career. No horse that has run in the Springboard Mile has ever gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. That's certainly not the case for the Los Alamitos Futurity, which is set to be run later today in California. 6 Kentucky Derby winners have run in the Los Al Futurity and then gone on the next year to wear the roses. 3 of those finished second, 1 finished third, and 1 was unplaced in the Futurity. Only 1 horse has won both the Los Alamitos Futurity and the Kentucky Derby. Can you name him? That's our trivia question for today's show. Usually I do a poll question. Today I thought it would be a fun trivia question. Who is the only horse to win both the Los Alamitos Futurity and the Kentucky Derby? Let's see how many people in HRN Nation get it right. I could take it a step further and say, name the horse that was unplaced. The only horse. Let's do it that way, too. All right, let's have a little fun. Who is the only horse to win both the Los Alamitos Futurity and the Kentucky Derby? And name the only horse to be unplaced in the Futurity and come back and win the Kentucky Derby the next year. Yeah, that's fun. A little two-part question there. The only horse to win both the Los Alamitos Futurity and the Kentucky Derby, and then name the horse, the only horse to be unplaced in the Futurity and win the Kentucky Derby the following spring. Chauncey's going to love me for that one. You can go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and let me know your thoughts. I'll pass those along later in the program. See how many people get that right. Today's field in the Futurity is relatively small, just six horses. And if history is any indication, you would be very wise, and we can say this about a lot of races, including the Kentucky Derby, by the way, you would be very wise to keep an eye on any horses trained by Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. And this year, that arrow points straight at Spielberg, who is second choice at odds of 5-2. Bob has won the Futurity a record 12 times. There are trainers who work their tail off in this sport every single day, and they would give their right arm to win 12 stakes races, let alone graded stakes. Bob has won this particular race 12 times, including each of the past 6 years. Now, that streak, it's not a chip shot this year for Bob. That streak could be in jeopardy because of the morning line favorite, Red Flag, who comes from the barn of trainer John Shiros. He throttled Spielberg earlier this year, and they'll get a rematch in the Grade 2 Losail Futurity later today. That's race 4 on the card in Southern California, 4:28 Pacific time, 7:28 Eastern is when you can catch that Los Alamitos Futurity. Should be a good one. How about our old friend Maxfield? Remember him? Boy, what a career it's been for Maxfield already. The undefeated son of Street Sense returns again at the fairgrounds today in the Tenacious Stakes. He broke his maiden first out in September of 2019. He comes right back in his second start and wins the Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland. Everything is coming up roses for Maxfield, and that's exactly what his connections were thinking. Goes to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile in 2019 at Santa Anita. Gets scratched right before the race with a bone chip. He returns on May 23rd of this year to win the Matt Wynn at Churchill Downs. Great training job by Brendan Walsh. And he would have missed the Derby on the first Saturday in May, but with it being moved to September, because of the pandemic, he was one of the likely favorites. Well, in June, Maxfield suffers yet another injury, this time a chondrular fracture that required surgery. He's off the Derby trail for the second time. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. This is a tough game. You better have your big boy pants on if you're going to play in this game. Off the trail for a second time. He returns today. We'll see him in action later today at the fairgrounds. And I'm going to talk with Jimmy Bell, who is the president of U.S. Godolphin Operations. He's going to be with me coming up at 8:35 Eastern time to talk about the return of Maxfield. Yesterday, Tim Wilkin wrapped up a brilliant 35-year career writing about horse racing for the Albany Times Union. I believe it was 1985, the first year that Tim started covering horse racing and other sports, too, in the Albany region. But he was so good at covering horse racing. He worked tirelessly. And he's been a regular guest on this program the past several years. He typically joins us every Travers morning. And coming up at 9 Eastern, I'm going to spend some time with Tim. Yesterday was his final day at the Albany Times Union. I'll spend some time looking back on his career and listening to him share some stories, some of his top moments. There have been several. And really looking forward to that visit with Tim, one of the classiest guys that you're going to meet in thoroughbred racing, too. So that comes up at 9 Eastern. At 9:20, Eric Hamelbeck will be with me. Eric is the CEO of the National HPPA. Steve Asmussen wrote an op-ed piece that appeared in the December 1st edition of the TDN. And it involves racetrack safety, not in the afternoons necessarily, but during morning training. And Eric's going to be with me from the HBPA to talk about Steve's piece and share his thoughts from the horseman perspective and why this is such an issue. So that comes up at 9:20. My first guest on the show, kind of doing this in reverse, my first guest at 8:15 in just a few minutes is the husband-wife team of Ryan and Andrea Gresseth. They have started Horse and Julep Racing Club, and it's a fun venture. I'll tell you more about that at 8:15, or they will. It's really neat. Looking forward to that visit coming up in just a couple of minutes. So Ryan and Andrea Gresseth coming up at 8:15, 8:35. Jimmy Bell from Godolphin, our industry star of the week, comes around right about 8:50. 9 o'clock, Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union. Eric Hamelbeck from the HBPA at 9:20. Our Four Roses Bourbon segment in the second half of the program as well. And a special holiday treat for all of you looking ahead to Christmas, which is coming up very, very shortly, as we know. All right, I'm back with more on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Racing fans, don't miss opening day next Saturday, December 26th, the day after Christmas, at spectacular Santa Anita. Although there is still no public admittance, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Santa Anita will present a total of 6 stakes on opening day, highlighted by the Grade 1 Run Happy Malibu and 2 other Grade 1s, the La Brea at 7 furlongs, and for the first time ever on opening day, the American Oaks at 1¼ miles on turf. Tune in early on opening day as special first post time for a tremendous 11-race card is at 11 a.m. And don't miss track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley as they handicap the opening day races beginning at 10:20 a.m. next Saturday. For additional information, please visit santaanita.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they are coming with a flourish at the quarter pole. Favorite Trick is yet to start his run. Cape Town is gearing up. He's 5 lengths away. Top of the stretch, and Real Quiet gets the lead on the outside. Indian Charlie is under the whip in second. Cape Town will have to do more. Victory Gallop is running with Hallory Hunter on the far outside. But Real Quiet is at the 8th pole. He's got the lead by 2. Indian Charlie, Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming. Real Quiet is a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 120.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Kurt Becker bringing them home in the 1998 Run for the Roses. I play that clip because that was the same event, the same year that I became engaged to my wife, Michelle. Got engaged at the Kentucky Derby in 98, real quiet, went on to win. It was a spectacular day, a very memorable day for a lot of different reasons. And I know that we could say the same for the husband-wife duo of Ryan and Andrea Gresseth, who are with me now from Horse and Tulip Racing Club in South Carolina. Ryan, first of all, I'll welcome you to the program. We'll welcome Andrea. I think she's there with you too, but let's start with Ryan for a second. Good morning, my friend. Thanks for taking the time.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for having us on. It's really surreal to be on as to be on the other side of the radio after being a fan for so long and listening to all your shows. It's quite something.
Well, I'm excited for this visit, and Andrea, welcome to the program as well. I don't know, did you guys get engaged at a racing event, or was it a totally separate thing? I'll let Andrea answer that.
It was a totally separate thing, but the special thing about our story is that Ryan really pursued me in horse country. I hadn't been to Lexington ever, and when we were dating, I think that was the first trip we took together.
All right, well, tell me
there,
more about
he also took me to Aiken.
Yeah, fantastic. Aiken is one of those places that's on my bucket list. I've never been. This past week, I had a chance to visit with trainer Ron Stevens, who trained in Aiken for more than 30 years and trained for Dogwood. And we'll talk more about him, I'm sure, during this interview. But Ron was just a fantastic guest on Trainer Talk this past week. And, Ryan, you were instrumental in helping me set. I can't thank you enough.
It was my pleasure. I think the world of Ron, I think he's just phenomenal. I love his stories. I love his, just his personality and his craft, and success with the horses has really been phenomenal. And I was really glad to be able to connect you guys.
All right. So tell me more, and I'll just throw it to each of you, and you can take it and run with it. But tell me more about Horse and Julep Racing Club. What is it? How does it work? How did the concept come about?
Yeah, I'll start. Mike, I've been a horse enthusiast for a long time, thoroughbred enthusiast, almost 20 years now. I was one of those guys, Mike, that spent more time studying pedigrees and racing forums in my college classes than the textbooks. However, my background is primarily in broodmares and matings and foaling and the racing element came along, kind of developed a little later on. And as Andrea and I got married, she came from a non-racing background at all. So I had my work cut out for me to bring her along with me in this. And so I started taking her to some of these, places that I felt like were so special. I just wanted to introduce her to. And so obviously Lexington is the epicenter of that. We would go and, see, the mares and foals that we had and go, see stallions and go to Keeneland. And then we went to Saratoga Racetrack. Saratoga is just amazing and had a lot of fun in that community. And then we go to places like Aiken and, just that quaint little town, even places like Gulfstream Park in South Florida have a lot of fun to offer. So I basically tried to bring her along in the fun and experience element of all this, and then from there, kind of got her blessing to get involved in some groups, some racing groups, and we've done that and we've had a little success. But I will say some of the things that we really wanted from that were community and more of that experience, and we felt like that was an area that we really felt like we could maybe offer more. My background and our background together, we love hospitality. We love getting people together, whether that's here or on trips. It's just our DNA and our lifeblood. So when we kind of had this crazy idea about a year ago, and I reached out to Phil Hager, and he's an agent in Kentucky, and I bounced this off of him a year ago last January, and I said, hey, what do you think about starting a group? And I really want to build it around experiential and community and let people meet each other and have a lot of fun, maybe even before the horses get to the races and thinking about how you could do that. And I've always thought that, you know, a lot of the best of the partnerships, they leave a lot on the table when they buy in September and take them right to, you know, a training center like Ocala, because you miss out on Kentucky, you miss out on Lexington, the bluegrass, which is so phenomenal. And so we're going to back up and we're going to buy here in January. We're forming the club this month. We hope to have all the spots reserved by the end of the month here. And we're going to form an LLC, and the LLC will go and buy in January. Phil is going to select those horses for us, and he is just a phenomenal up-and-coming star. He has just had great success, worked under some phenomenal people like Bill Mott and you know, other top agents like forgetting the names right now, but
he's been around a lot of big time people.
Worked, you know, had a lot of success. So we wanted to partner with just really successful people to give us our group the best chance of success. So the horses will go from there to Darby Dan Farm. I've got a relationship with them, and they've been just wonderful. See this vision and see our passion, and said, hey, you know, let your horses grow up here for the next, you know, for that 6 to 8 months before they go to the training facility. And our partners will be able to go meet up there at some point, you know, pending all this virus stuff. But we're planning to do that, to get the partners together there. And then from there, they'll go down to South Carolina to train. We're hoping to get the partners there together as well late this fall and do the same exact thing and have a great weekend out of it. And we really are excited to put on some great experiences for the members before the horses even get to the races. And then we've got obviously great aspirations for success there, and you know, great trainers identified that we want to work with. So, Mike, that's really the spirit of what we're trying to get through here.
Andrea, Ryan mentioned that you were not into horse racing when he met you, and I read on your website that your first intro into racing came about a decade ago with the Queen's Cup, which is a steeplechase event held every year in South Carolina. Tell me a little bit more about your involvement and what this ride's been like for you.
Sure. Yeah, the steeplechase, the Queen's Cup in Charlotte, is definitely a fun event, and Ryan and I and our mutual friends, we would gather there every year, and every year the girls' hats, our hats got a little bit bigger each year. We really put a lot into it, just coordinating, just making it a fun time, and Ryan would always take the lead in hosting and seeing his hospitality side come out. That's one of the things that I was really drawn to in him when we first started dating. And I would make sweet tea, mint juleps. You know, we'd just have a good time.
Is it, you know, and by the way, I want to correct myself. I think I said South Carolina. That's held in, as you said, Charlotte, North Carolina is where the Queen's Cup is. But isn't that what, at its core, racing is all about? Andrea, we say that about the Kentucky Derby all the time, that the fact that you can go and get dressed up and put on the big hats and guys can put on the finest coats and ties, or you can go into the infield and just hang out with a short and a shorts and T-shirt, whatever it is. That's, I mean, to hear the way that you've gotten involved in what's captured you, that's what this sport's all about, isn't it?
That's correct. Absolutely. Yeah, and in addition, you know, to those races, just the experiencing the different cultures that these towns have to offer where racing is held. You know, I love to travel. I love experiencing different cultures and communities. And, you know, when Ryan and I were dating and he was exposing me to these different communities, I learned that I really don't have to go far. You don't have to go abroad to get an elegant experience, you know, and try new foods and meet different people and see beautiful scenery.
Yeah, and it's going to be great that people can experience this through the new Horse and Julep Racing Club, which, by the way, if you want to learn more, you can go to horseandjulep.club. That's horseandjulep.club, and check out the website. One thing, Ryan, that I told you that really stood out to me when I looked at your website was the family aspect, and I think that's going to draw a lot of people in. Because of the fact that they can experience this sport on a bit of a different level. They can do it together as a family. They can do it as an individual, and they can be around your family and go down this road with you guys. And I think that's fantastic, Ryan.
Mike, that is something that we definitely pride ourselves in. We love people. We love them all different walks of life. And we actually have young kids ourselves, Mike. We've got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they love, you know, going to Kentucky, and they love seeing the horses and feeding some carrots. And we just launched this thing 2 weeks ago, and we have been talking to a lot of people who this is resonating with, and some of the spots that have already been taken are families with young kids. And then we've got on the other spectrum, we've got, you know, grandparents with grandchildren that are excited to expose them to this sport, and, yeah, you know, retirees that want to, you know, do this with their retirement, and then everything in between, you know, people in careers and professionals. And so it's going to be all walks of life, and that's what we're excited about. People that have never owned horses before are signing up to do this, which is really, you know, amazing that they're entrusting us with their first experience. And then there's people who have actually been very successful in the game and have owned a lot of horses on their own and want to do this because they want camaraderie and experience with people and community. And we welcome all those people. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and they are in good hands with your trainer, Phil Hager, too, or bloodstock agent Phil Hager, who is going to be overseeing things and picking out those babies. And again, partnerships are forming right now. Horseandjulep.club is where you can learn more, or you can give Ryan and Andrea a call, and I'm sure they'll be more than happy to answer any of your questions. Ryan, Andrea, listen, really appreciate the visit. This interview, like all of our interviews, brought to our listeners by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Folks can wear what they love at EmbraceTheRace.com. And appreciate the visit this morning. Happy holidays, and all the best with the Horse and Julep Club.
Mike, thanks so much. And we are looking forward to that first call for the interview after the first graded stakes win at this venture, all right? Don't forget our number.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'll be all over it. You got it. Ryan, Andrea, thank you so much.
Happy holidays, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, happy holidays, guys. Yeah, fantastic. Horseandjulep.club, a cool idea, and we'll see how it all plays out. But it seems certainly like this is going to be a big hit, and I think you'll enjoy being involved with them. They are great people. Speaking of great people, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington. When I come back, I'll visit with Jimmy Bell, the president of Godolphin's U.S. operations and the president of the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. I'll talk to him about Maxfield and about Thoroughbred Aftercare right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This lady had a wealth of character, a marvelous, vibrant personality, and she was indeed an inspiration to others. She was a lady through and through. And in the roaring 1920s, while still in her 20s, she entered the world of racing as the owner of a steeplechaser. A racing stable, Brookmead, came into existence a few years later. She was adverse to pomposity and took great delight in needling and openly deflating an obvious inflated ego. Her infectious sense of humor provided her the tool for doing so, especially evident in times of stress. Perhaps equally as synonymous with Brookmead Stable and its success were the names of Preston and Elliot Birch, who trained her horses. Preston began training for Our Lady of the Moment in 1944, and on October 21st of that year, he saddled her Dear Me for her in the Maryland Handicap at Laurel. Dear Me whipped the redoubtable Twilight Tear by 7 lengths in that affair, and that was Birch's first of a long, long list of stakes winners he saddled for Brookmead. Birch was very patient with young horses, and he and our subject probably received more thrills from a horse named Sailor than any other racing in her colors. That was in the decade of the 50s, while others racing in her colors included Sword Dancer, Bowl of Flowers, and Oligarchy. Her superb Flower Bowl won the Delaware Handicap in 1956, and on May 2, 1959, Sword Dancer won the Derby for her, while on the very same day, Big Effort won the Bed of Roses at the old Jamaica racetrack on Long Island. In 1934, Our Lady of the Day, as it were, became the very first woman in American turf history to lead the winning owners list. Her Bowl of Flowers was voted Philly Champion of 1960 and 61, and Sword Dancer was voted Horse of the Year in 1959. This marvelous lady dearly loved the thoroughbreds, and among the many greats carrying her silks to the winner's circle, she considered her best to have been Cavalcade, Sailor, Sword Dancer, and Bowl of Flowers. But she had a very soft spot for others, including Okapi, Sunglow, and High Quest. In 1934 and 16 years later in 1950, Brookmead was the leading money-winning stable in America. From 1925 until her demise in 1962, her horses won 1,144 races. As previously indicated, her trademark was her love for and the ability to jest with her trainers, the Birches. Before big races, she would often break the tension in the paddock by saying, for example, quote, "Do you think I should put on the blinkers today?" Or, quote, "Now you haven't put that saddle on right." When her jockey would appear, she could be heard to say, quote, "Now, Preston, you step back. I'm going to give the order on how to ride this horse today," with a twinkle in her eye, of course. And she would go on very solemnly to say, quote, "You just go on out and win this race today." If it was muddy, she would be quite apt to say, "Now, don't you dare get my colors dirty today." Yes, this grand lady, and that she was in every sense of the word through and through, held to the sporting ideals with the best characterized racing to its very best, both in victory and defeat. The mistress of Brookmead Stable and the subject of this piece, Isabel Dodge Sloan.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 Aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Racing for the top of the stretch, New York Traffic and Pneumatic. Pneumatic tries to cut the corner off the turn. New York Traffic comes a little bit wide. These two hook up with 3/16 to go. New York Traffic's in front. Maxfield is making progress. Here comes Maxfield rallying boldly down the center of the track. New York Traffic wanders outside. Pneumatic digs in. Maxfield continues to close. New York Traffic and Maxfield. Pneumatic is down inside. Maxfield is thinking Derby. Wins by a length, running down New York Traffic, Pneumatic, and attachment rate.
Well, that's the way it sounded the last time we saw Maxfield on the racetrack. Travis Stone had the call of the Matt Wynn Stakes at Churchill Downs. He was a winner that day after having to scratch from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile the previous year, months before. Brendan Walsh did a great job bringing him back, getting him ready to fire his best shot. He would have missed the Kentucky Derby had it been held on the first Saturday in May. Keep in mind, that race was May 23rd of this year. He would have missed the Derby if it was on the first Saturday in May, but with it being moved to September, Maxfield was among the favorites for this year's Kentucky Derby when a second injury forced him off the Derby trail for a second time. That's brutal. It has been a tough, tough career so far for Maxfield, but with that said, he's so good and so talented that he is a perfect 3-for-3 and a Grade 1 winner as a two-year-old. And today he looks to get back on track and prove that he is still the real deal in the Tenacious Stakes at the Fairgrounds. And that would be welcome news to Jimmy Bell, who is the president of Godolphin's U.S. operations. He is with me now here on the Equine Forum. Jimmy, good morning, my friend. Always great to catch up.
Good morning to you. I enjoyed hearing that race call. It feels like we're back in action.
You're back in action in a big way today. And, you know, I went through earlier in the show, and I just kind of recapped it very quickly there. But this has been such an up-and-down career for Maxfield, and I can imagine this has to be one of the more frustrating scenarios that you've ever been involved with.
Well, frustrating, yes, but on the other hand, there's a sense of confidence because not too often are you around a horse that obviously shows the talents that Maxfield's had from, you know, yourself breaking your maiden first time out, going right from there into a grade one race, and obviously having another time out coming back and off the bench and to run a race like that and a Matt win. So, I mean, he's in three races, he's shown so much that even though it's been a long time between races, you know, what you always hope for. I don't think one thing we don't question is his talent. And for that reason, we're really optimistic and excited to see him back in action. And more importantly, as you earlier alluded, the patience that everybody has shown, especially Brendan, in bringing him back. And hopefully we're looking for, you know, a very productive four-year-old season with a full body of work that can maybe show the talents of this colt time and time again. So very, very, you know, we're very excited to be back, and here we are, you know, ready to run in the afternoon.
You know, Jimmy, I come at this from the outside looking in, but you are obviously intimately involved with every move that takes place with Maxfield. And I talked about earlier in the program, I talked about that training job that Brenda did, getting him back to the races after being scratched from the Breeders' Cup in 2019, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, getting him back for the Matt win, but not just back to the races, getting him back and ready to fire his best shot after all that time off and overcoming that initial injury. How good of a training job was that by Brendan?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. I think his whole card is tremendous patience. I think he reads his horses very well. He's the consummate horseman himself. So, you know, he's been both on their backs and on the ground, and I think he's got that extra sense of communicating with horses that he himself, you know, will get on them, and he's got that feel. He knows, and he really lets the horse sort of talk to him and tell him when and where. And we were on the phone just the other day, and he said, you know, we're going to have to run. He's figured it out. He's ready. We know there's still probably a few cobwebs and a little bit of rust on the wheel, but that was the case, obviously, in the Matt win as well. And, you know, it just takes probably a very, very talented individual to be able to not only physically be ready to run, but mentally be ready to run. And that's something we probably don't talk about all the time, is the mental aspect as well. And one of Maxfield's greatest attributes is his mental toughness and just how he is so professional in how he goes about his daily routine. And I think it makes it a little easier for Brendan to read him because he's very genuine. He tells you right where he is. And, you know, you've got to be able to be picking up on all those signs. And Brendan does a phenomenal job at that.
Take me through the past 7 months since that win. In the Matt win at Churchill, Jimmy, what have these past 7 months been like for Maxfield?
Well, again, you know, the good news is that neither one of the timeouts were really, you know, truly significant. We did the right thing by the horse, gave him ample time to completely heal, come back, get back into his own rhythm, and I think that you know, this game is built on hope, and you know that if you just get the opportunity to get him back, he'll take care of the rest, or certainly that's our feeling. And listen, today's no easy. It's never an easy spot coming back. You know, you're in there with a tough horse from Steve Asmussen. You've got to always respect that. Then there's always the hard-knocking older horses. Al Stahl's got a tough one and locally owned. So this is a great spot to come back in, but it's not an easy spot. But there's also no easy spots when you're out of condition. So you can't just exactly dip your toe in the shallow end. You got to jump in and see where you're at. And you know, this is the beginning. This is, you know, this is just what it is. This is hopefully the beginning of an important year of racing for him.
you were kind enough, Jimmy, by the way, talking with Jimmy Bell, the president of Godolphin's U.S. operations, you were kind enough to join me on this show the morning of the Matt win on May 23rd. And one thing that you spoke about was his pedigree. And he is a son of street sense out of a Bernardini mare. Now, I know that that's a pedigree that's near and dear to Darley and Godolphin's heart, but that pedigree, Bernardini, has become an outstanding broodmare sire.
What he has accomplished at his age is you know, really puts him at the top of the chart of broodmare sires, you know, for a long time to come. And, I mean, it's just amazing. You just be casually reading stake entries or the PPs on horse. Oh, that's, that's another daughter Bernardini. That's another daughter Bernardini. And, you know, what he has accomplished is really phenomenal. And, you know, how great it is to have a horse that's going to pass along. We always talk about, you know, sons of sires and sires in the male line, but to be able to carry on and make no mistake, his impact as a broodmare sire will be significant for really, really generations to come, and a foundation for a lot of operations of having those young Bernardini mares.
Jimmy, the news came out this past week. By the way, good luck with Maxfield later today. I'll shift gears on us here. The news came out earlier this week that you were elected once again as president of the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, and that's an organization that I know from day one has been near and dear to your heart. Talk about the importance of aftercare in this sport, because I don't know, sometimes I think that might get overlooked a little bit when we start talking about all the racing. So tell me about the importance of aftercare.
Well, you know, that's exactly, you hit it right on the head. You know, initially I think we started in 2012, initially it was about just awareness, making people aware of the after racing and what goes on, or it just doesn't stop that day. And so initially that just trying to make people aware, and then we moved into educating people, and now understanding more after you become aware, more of the educational process. And today, you know, some 8 years into it, it's now talking about in terms of the obligation. You know, this is part of owning a horse. This is part of having the blacksmith come by. I mean, these are all, taking care of the horse is an obligation as well. So this whole thing has been awareness, education, obligation. And it's not an easy thing to keep drilling on, but I think it's become a part of a plank in the platform of our industry, that I think the industry, everyone involved in the industry collectively understands and recognizes how, you know, that this is a major component of owning a horse and what the industry is doing, and has made tremendous, you know, a tremendous move forward in that regard. I mean, if you look at today, we now have, I think, 81 accredited organizations in over 170 facilities. We've generated over $20 million and probably assisted, I think, 11,000 thoroughbreds. So, yes, very, very significant. And, you know, I think that one of the great things about the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is that it's sort of gotten the good housekeeping seal. When you're raising that kind of money, people really want to know where it's going, what it's doing. And I've jokingly said many times that I'm not sure how well we would do when they come to inspect and accredit your operation to be able to become accredited by the TAA. I mean, there's an education component. There's, they go through the facilities. People literally go to these places and look at them and talk to them about their adoption policies. They have to be in operation 3 or 4 years before you can even apply to this thing. So we've got the confidence of everybody knowing that this money is going where it needs to be, which is always a question mark when you're making these kind of contributions. But, you know, the TAA has come a tremendous long way, but gee whiz, we got, you know, this is a big problem, and it's something that we can't just sort of take lightly. But you got to keep at it for everybody's perspective.
What are some of the things moving forward, Jimmy, that you would like to see accomplished by the TAA and on the aftercare front in general?
Well, I think funding. You know, funding has to be it, and we've got to continue to find ways to be sustainable. I mean, we get some great spikes and some great aha moments where, gosh, that was great, somebody stepped up or somebody did this. But, you know, this is an industry obligation. Initially, when we set this thing up, we tried to make as many small touch points as possible, you know, at the sales, at the racetrack, here, there, and yonder, just a little bit. But it's difficult. It takes a lot of, a lot of bookkeeping, a lot of communication, coordination. And, you know, one thing that I'm, you know, excited about is I look at the board of directors and the people that are involved from, you know, from officials in the racing office to sales companies to people in the jockey club to, you know, everybody's got some areas of expertise and some skill sets that have made this, you know, a very, very significant operation. And to answer your question, you know, we've got to find that magic way to get this thing sustainably funded. It's very hard going back every time and trying to reinvent the wheel. And if we can just get some overall buy-in to where, you know, people understand it's one for all for one, that's where our sustainability comes from. And it's all about, you know, continuing to fund this. As you can tell, with 170 facilities, and I think this year we awarded or granted over $3 million. That's a lot to do every year, and, you know, it doesn't stop. You've got it every year, so it's not like it's a one-time off and we got that done. It's continual.
And now you get to work alongside my man Jeff Bloom, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's glad you brought that up. I mean, John Phillips was the past president. Everybody's had a real skill set that's been at the helm of this thing and brought a unique perspective of what they can do well. And, you know, Jack Wolf initially, you know, did a fantastic job. It was not easy to get this off the ground. And then, you know, I came in for a brief stint and followed up with John Phillips back again. As I said, you can step aside, but you can't step away. And now Jeff is going to take over next year after my year. And, you know, again, there's a guy that's very committed. He understands it. He's been on the ground. He's compassionate about it. And he's got spheres of influence that others of us don't. And, you know, again, everybody brings a little something to the table, and very excited to have Jeff alongside. And he's been a big supporter all the way through.
Well, you can go to thoroughbredaftercare.org if you want to learn more about the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. Again, Jimmy Bell with me, the president of Godolphin's U.S. Operations and the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. Jimmy, you would be hard-pressed to find somebody that's a better ambassador for our sport than you, my friend. And I've known you a long time and greatly appreciate all your efforts and everything you do for the sport, and greatly appreciate you taking the time this morning. Happy holidays, my friend.
Well, same to you, and what a great job you do kind of getting a good message out, this, that, and the other. Listen, it's an honor to be a part of this, and whatever little things we can do, hopefully make a little difference. But, you know, just pleased and privileged to be a part of it.
Yeah, thanks for the time, Jimmy. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Enjoyed it. Thanks again. Appreciate being
all
on.
Right. Jimmy Bell here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fantastic work, both on the Godolphin side and the aftercare side. But you want somebody to be a spokesperson for this industry, and Jimmy Bell's a pretty good choice. Yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better choice than Jimmy Bell. All right, going to get you another break. When I come back, your industry star of the week, and then I'll get you set for a busy second half of the program right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Introducing racing's newest partnership experience, the Horse and Julep Racing Club. Come see what makes us so different. The inaugural partnership club is forming right now and will purchase yearlings at the Keeneland January sale under the eye of rising star agent Phil Hager. The horses will go to historic Darby Dan Farm, whose land has raised no fewer than 6 Kentucky Derby winners. Partners should plan for a meetup there to visit the farm, the horses, and the best of the bluegrass. Visit horseandjulep.club today to reserve your spot. Horseandjulep.club.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 Graded Stakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead, Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And 2-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tap It, standing at Gainesway.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
At the top of the lane, Fighting Motion's kicking on. Mr. Frisky's not finding. Summer's full. Unbridled, though, is still cruising up on the outside. Craig Perrette gives him his head now, and Unbridled takes the lead. Summer's full tries to go with him on the inside of these two. Summer's full and Unbridled. Summer's full is playing the better of the two with a 16th to go. And Summer's full has turned the table.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Trevor Denman had the call of the 1990 Preakness. The Dogwood Stable color bearer Summer Squall getting the victory, turning the tables on Derby winner Unbridled. It was a tremendous performance, one that meant so much to Cott and the people that Cott Campbell was around with Dogwood. It was a special, special moment indeed. And because of that, I thought it would be appropriate to honor longtime Dogwood stable trainer Ron Stevens as our Industry Star of the Week. This segment brought to you every week by my good friend Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. And you can visit Stuart and his consignments at all of the major sales, which will be coming up shortly, no doubt about it. Stuart does a fantastic job. So Ron Stevens trained for Cott Campbell and Dogwood for 30-plus years, and it was a wonderful relationship. Ron has done fantastic work, and he joined me for the full hour on Trainer Talk this past week, and you can go back and listen to that show presented by Fasig Tipton. You can listen to it on our website, but he's done such great work that I thought it would be cool to cut out some sound bites and a portion of that interview and play it for you here. Ron Stevens, our Industry Star of the Week. He started looking back on that performance and that talented colt named Summer Squall.
Well, I tell you what, just listening to that stretch again like I have a thousand times still gives me goosebumps. That was pretty exciting. And, you know, Cott had done a fabulous job of getting started with syndication, but that really put him on the map. That was a real – Summer Squall was a stamp of, you know, really making his mark. And, of course, that just boiled over and helped me out too. So, great memories. We were talking about getting to Aiken. When we came to Aiken, Summer Squall came to Aiken to be broke. We bought him out of the summer sale from Will Farish. And he was a handful. He was a kind of an ornery little cuss. But he was an athlete. And I remember back on the catalog page when we looked at him, I had written some things like little small, studdish, didn't have the – he kind of had inset eyes. We used to call him, I guess, pig eyes, but now we call him Summer Squall eyes. But he's a very intelligent colt, but he was a little on the ornery side. But I've had big letters on that page, athlete. He was just so athletic, so quick, so light on his feet that he really got your attention.
Do you
and
find
so, you know,
that
he
sometimes...
was fun to break, but he was a handful, and we ran him in the trials here, and I'm the only trainer that got him beat as a two-year-old. He was 5 for 5, ending up by winning the hopeful. But Neil Howard, who trained him, was very kind. He's told people that Ron had sent him a baked cake, and all they had to do was take him out of the oven, which was, you know, helped me out a little bit, too. So I appreciate that. And Neil and I are very good friends and have been for a long time. He's a great guy and a great trainer. But Summer Squall kind of put us on the map. And as you said, got redemption for the Kentucky Derby. I was there. I thought he had it won, but I think the crowd and some other things got him. But he came back and redeemed himself and, of course, won the Jim Beam, the Bluegrass, the Hopeful, the Saratoga Special. And I don't think he got enough credit as a stallion. A lot of people know that he produced some nice mares, Broodmare sire, but he also produced Charismatic, you know. And everybody remembers him and what happened at the Belmont with Chris Hantley. But and of course, he had some runners, too, like, of course, Storm Song. We picked her out at a September yearling sale, and she went on to be a champion and won the Breeders' Cup up in Canada. So, yeah, Summer Squall will always have a big soft spot in my heart.
Who's the toughest horse that you've ever been around?
Probably a mare named Donna Calkey. Cott was one of the first people to go to England and get some horses like Dominion, who was a nice stakes horse, and then everybody started doing it. So he went to had a doctor, a veterinarian, go to Argentina, and we bought two fillies up here, Fazana and Donna Calkey. It's D-A-N-A-C-A-L-Q-U-I. People don't really remember, but she was a nice mare. She won the Sheepshead Bay. But a funny story at the farm, it was just before we came to Aiken. I had a policy that when the horses came in, we wanted to get their temperature, check them out. And I also had a policy that I wouldn't ask my grooms to do anything I wouldn't do. So when the groom came up and said, I need your help getting the temperature of this mare, I knew something was up. And especially when I saw all the other grooms huddled around there, probably waiting to see me get kicked real good. So I walked up to the stall and I put my hand on her head and I ran it up, touched her ear, and I said, 100 degrees, right on the money, and I turned and walked away. The next morning, the groom couldn't catch her in the stall, and I went in, and she wheeled and fired with both hind legs, and I grabbed some bars and hung there like a monkey, and she kept firing, and then she'd look at me and adjust a little bit and fire some more. When she got tired, I dropped down and got out. But she was very, very tough that way. The veterinarian never got a Kha'zix operation on her before she raced. Farrier never got hind shoes on her at the farm. I trimmed her myself. And when the vet had her tranquilized as much as he could with straw bales behind her and tried the Kha'zix, she's kicked those bales around like they were toothpicks. So, and it, probably the funniest story I remember was when she was racing after she had won the Sheepshead Bay. Cott and I were up there and we were getting ready to leave and walking down the shed row saying goodbye to the horses. And as we walked by, she charged, hit the webbing, and her teeth snapped, and it sounded like a rifle going off. And Cod didn't even break stride. He just kind of looked at her and said, well, goodbye to you, Donna, and we just kept on walking. Now, I will say that we bred her a couple times, and as a broodmare, she mellowed out, and she was fine. But she was one tough son of a gun.
All right, let's flip that around a little bit. How about the horse that you would say was probably the most perfect young lady, the most perfect gentleman that went on to maybe do some really good things on the racetrack?
I'm going to have to switch from a dogwood horse. I've had wonderful clients, fantastic clients over the years. And one of those was Mr. Ned Evans with Spring Hill Farm. And we had the pleasure of having a horse that actually got a reputation for not being that gentle, but he was falsely accused, and that would be Quality Road. Quality Road was a fantastic racehorse, made over $2 million, and should have made way more than that. But Mr. Evans, he usually sold most of his colts and kept his fillies. And at the sales back in that day, he was having me look at most of the yearlings and kind of give him an appraisal of what I thought. And I love this colt. It's big, strong, nice-looking colt with a kind eye. And I said, you know, I really like him. I wouldn't give him away. And he did RNA him in September and kept him. He sent him to me on the 1st of November, And he said, now I want you to push this colt because I'm going to, I really want to get rid of the colt, so I'm going to put him back in the Keeneland 2-year-old sale. And I said, okay. I looked at the big colt. It's already November. But we went to work, and he broke like a, just like a puppy dog. Just never took a bad step, never did anything wrong, perfect in the gate. And when we started galloping him and I saw the movement of this colt, I told Mr. Evans, I'm not sure you want to sell him. You might want to hang on to him. Well, he said, no, I want to sell him. And I trained horses for Mr. Evans for 20 years, and he was a man that when he made up his mind about something, that was the way it was going to be, and you didn't change it too often. But Chris Baker became his farm manager back about that time, and I got him on my side. He saw him train and loved him too, and we ganged up on him and said, we really think you ought to keep this colt. And to his credit, and we were probably partly lucky too, he kept Quality Road, and that was the last really nice horse that he had. He won the Florida Derby, was a favorite for the Kentucky Derby, or co-favorite, and then got a quarter crack. But where his reputation came up as being a handful was at the Breeders' Cup, where he was like co-favorite for the $5 million race. And just before the race, the TV helicopter came out taking pictures, and he got a little bit rattled. And I promise you, and I swear that if they'd have given him 30 seconds to settle and just to walk him in a circle to head it in, he would have been fine. Because after that race, Todd Pletcher, who had him and trained him, schooled him. He never did anything wrong in the gate again. He ran many more times, never did anything wrong in the gate again. But they were in a hurry, I guess. They grabbed him, and they twisted it in the air, and they threw a blindfold on him, and they had 1,200 pounds of muscle that said, no, you're not going to make this happen. So he got a reputation of being a bad gate horse, which he was not. He was one of the easiest, nicest colts that I've worked with.
All right, just a couple of the fantastic stories from Ron Stevens, longtime trainer for Dogwood, and as you heard him say, other clients as well in South Carolina. Ron, our industry star of the week, and that interview and that segment brought to you every Saturday by Stuart Morris. Going to get to a break. When I come back, hour number two, it kicks off with Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union. Eric Hamelback will be with me from the HBPA to talk about Steve Asmussen's op-ed that appeared in the December 1st TDN. So a lot of things to get to in the second half of the show. That's all ahead right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Improbable, then global campaign, Tacitus, tis the law, all behind Authentic, who strides away in the Keeneland sunset for John Velasquez. Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Tis the Law's got a two-leg lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Tarnawa is running fast down the center of the course. Tarnawa past Magical has caught Channel Maker. Tarnawa moves on by Tarnawa and Colin Keane to win the Longines Turf. Order of Australia looking for a huge upset here. Order of Australia gets that upset at 73-1. For Pierre Charles Boudot, who's having quite a Breeders' Cup.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour two of a very busy Equine Forum, the show that launched a network. Happy to have you back with me. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. And, man, if you missed any portion of the first half of the show, you missed Jimmy Bell with a sensational interview talking about Maxfield and Thoroughbred Aftercare. That's something you'll want to go back and listen to. The industry star of the week, you just heard Ron Stevens, and Ryan and Andrea Gresseth of the Horse and Julep Racing Club talking about that new concept and launching those partnerships. Head back over to our website if you missed them, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this show will be available after we finish up at 10 o'clock Eastern, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Threw out a trivia question for you today in honor of the Los Alamitos Futurity, which will be run later today in Southern California. And six Kentucky Derby winners have run in the Los Al Futurity and then gone on, of course, to wear the roses the following spring. Only one horse has won both races. Can you name him? Can you name the only horse to win the Los Al Futurity and the Kentucky Derby? You can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and I'll pass along that answer and all the correct answers later in the show. Second part of that question, of those six, three finished second, one finished third. Of course, you had the one winner. One horse of the six was unplaced. Only one finished off the board in the Los Al Futurity and then came back the following year to win the Kentucky Derby. Can you name that horse? So two parts to that question, and you can do it on our social media pages, @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, I told you that the second half of the show was going to kick off with a very special interview. Tim Wilkin has had an unbelievable career covering thoroughbred racing, 35 years with the Albany Times Union. That career came to a close yesterday, but I thought it would be appropriate, before I introduce you to Tim, to welcome him by looking back on, well, kind of where it all started.
There goes Chief's Crown gaining ground, and Fast the Count with McCarron gains on the rail. Chief's Crown, the favorite, now moves into second, gaining ground on the outside of Cutlass Reality as they approach the top of the stretch. It's Cutlass Reality on the rail, on the outside, Chief's Crown further out. There goes Creme Fresh with Maple. On the rail with Finkai is Stefan's Odyssey. Chief's Crown, Cutlass Reality, Stefan's Odyssey on the rail. Stefan's Odyssey on the rail with Finkai now gains the lead. On the outside is Chief's Crown, and farther out, here comes Creme Fresh. They pass the eighth pole. It's the entry of Woody Stevens. Creme Fresh with Maple. Stefan's Odyssey with Pinkai. Chief's Crown is third. Creme Fresh on the outside has the lead by a neck with Stefan's Odyssey second. Creme Fresh in front.
Well, that was the 1985 Traverse Stakes. And Tim Wilkin, that's where it all began for you. I know you have covered the Traverse every year since, and it's been a magical ride. Really appreciate the visit, my friend.
Hey, Mike, thanks an awful lot for that. Yeah, I don't know where the years go. The good part is, though, I'm going to still cover racing for the paper.
Yeah, it's great to have you still involved. You're retiring from the Times Union, but you'll be able to stay involved with Thoroughbred Racing, which is great news.
Yeah, and I'm not going to give the answer, but I think I know your question, your trivia question's answer.
Yeah, you'll have to tweet to me. You'll have to respond on the Twitter and see.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I don't know where the 35 years have gone. I mean, it's just God, it seems like yesterday I was going up and just trying to find my way to the Saratoga press box for the first time. And like, you know, my first 7 years in the business, I was working for the Saratogian newspaper. So I've actually had 42 years of Saratoga coverage, and it just seems it's mind-boggling to think that it's gone that long. I mean, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like it's been that long, but it has. So, and here we are.
Yeah, you know, the call we just heard, I think I said Chief's Crown Travers. That was your first Travers in 85. That was Creme Fresh winning the Belmont Stakes in 85. But that was the year that you started, Tim, and when you started in 85, did you ever imagine we'd be sitting here in 2020 and talking about you wrapping up this career at the Times Union all these years later?
No. Back then, I was just hoping in 85, I was hoping they'd keep me. I mean, I never had any illusions that I'd still be doing this long. But I guess I'm like a river. I just keep moving.
When you think back on these 35 years, and there was a piece that appeared, I think it was in the Albany Times Union. I saw it on Twitter that had you looking back on some of your top memories, not just with horse racing, but the other stories and people that you covered over the years. What are some of the things on the racing side that truly stand out to you?
Boy, I mean, I could probably talk to you on that until opening day at Saratoga. there's just so many. I mean, obviously, covering Saratoga is just not only been a pleasure, but it's been a treat to be able to go up there every morning, which is the best part of the day for me, to go up to in the mornings and, you know, watch workouts, talk to trainers. I mean, I remember when I started, I'd be out there listening to Woody Stevens sitting on his pony, telling every day that at the end of his conversations that he wanted to remind me he had won 5 Belmonts in a row. And it was always special talking to Woody. I mean, talking to Dwayne Lucas in his office. Dwayne would tell me that, you know, he had not shutters, but yes, he would have his windows shut so no one could see in. But he said that he could see out, and he was always telling me that when he saw me, he would allow me to come in because he liked me. So, and that always, you know, resonated with me that, you know, I got the respect of someone like him. And just down the road from him on the Oklahoma Trading Terms, Nick Zito, always had plenty of great conversations with St. Nick, and, you know, and still do to this day. And, you know, the list just goes on and on and on with the trainers that I've talked to, and, you know, I've gotten a pretty good relationship now with Bob Baffert. You know, he'll pick up my calls, and, you know, and he'll talk about everything ranging from, you know, his horses to his critics and also the people that, you know, with all the problems he's had with the positives. And he's been very frank with me about that. And, again, and the horses, too. I mean, who wouldn't love to be able to do what I do, being able to go out there and see these great animals perform in the mornings before they work in do their work in the afternoon? You know, Rachel Alexandra, she pops up as one of the most impressive ones. And Zenyatta during the Breeders' Cup, the one being able to see her and listening to John Sheriffs tell the great stories about Zenyatta. You know, I could name this year, Swiss Skydiver, who I got to get up close and personal with, and she's just an inquisitive, friendly animal who's just a beast on the racetrack. So, you know, I just can't you know, tell you how grateful I am that I've been able to do all of that.
This thing with Tim Wilkin, who, as you heard me say, wraps up a 35-year career with the Albany Times Union. He'll still continue to cover racing, which is great news for all of his fans out there, and there are plenty of those. Tim, last year you were honored with the Walter Haight Award from the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters. That's a prestigious award that honors career excellence in writing on thoroughbred racing. There have been several pieces that you've written that will resonate with people, but how about for you? What's the one or two stories that you have written over the years that are going to be among your favorite stories?
Boy, that's a loaded question right there, Mike. I'm going to answer that. I wonder if I can answer that in a different way, maybe just chronicling different events. Obviously, the Triple Crown runs of Justify and especially American Pharoah, because Pharoah was the first one that did it since Affirm. Those were magical moments for everyone that follows thoroughbred racing and everyone that covers thoroughbred racing, because I had been to a bunch of those Belmont Stakes with the Triple Crown on the line, and there was so much anticipation saying, is this year finally going to be the year? And it never was. You know, the likes of Funny Side and Chrome and an Easy Goer beat Sunday Silence in the Belmont. I mean, there was just so many of those moments that, you know, the people were waiting to explode at Belmont Park to welcome the next Triple Crown winner. When it finally did happen, I mean, the roar at Belmont Park when Pharoah was bounding down the stretch that day was something that I'd never heard sound like that. And that's an outdoor place. I mean, it was just a celebration of finally getting a Triple Crown winner. And I mean, the noise level at Saratoga when Rachel Alexandra beat the boys in the Woodward in 2009, that was another moment that will forever remain in my mind, frozen in my mind, is special. You know, that you really could hear the rafters shaking when she won that race. And, you know, those are the things that you don't forget. And, I hope I have a bunch more memories like that to experience. But, you know, so far, I mean, there's just been so many of them. And I mean, I remember doing stories leading up to Triple Crown runs and talking to people that failed, you know, and how they, what their emotions were like. I mean, I did that before, I think I did it before Justify's Triple Crown run. I mean, Belmont win. I think I did it before Farrell's Triple Crown win. And I did that, you know, it seemed like every year. And another story, too, just recently is the exploits of Tis the Law, you know, who's up in our parts. It's because of the local ownership with Sacatoga Stable and Jack Knowlton. It was a big story around here. And you know, covering Barkley Tag on a daily basis is, to me, a very, very much an enjoyable experience. And, you know, I hope he rebounds from the Breeders' Cup and runs big in the Pegasus.
You know, I referenced the piece that, and I believe it's in the Albany Times-Union. Is it today, Tim, or was it yesterday, talking about some of your top memories?
I think it's online now.
Okay.
I'm writing a final column that's supposed to appear tomorrow. But I guess basically I'm still going to have – I do year-end stuff that's going to appear next week, so some people might think I'm lying when I say I'm leaving because my byline will be in the paper next week. But rest assured, after that, you won't see me for a while until the horses, until the spring probably.
You know, I was excited to do this little interview with you, but one of the pieces that is included in that online feature about your top moments is a chat that you had with your longtime friend Mike Jarbo, who worked with you at the Albany Times-Union. Mike is no longer with us. He passed away. But when he retired in 2015, you sat down with him for a question and answer. That had to be, I can imagine, one of the more special things that you've done, looking back on the fact now that Mike's no longer with us.
It was. Mike and I had a really good, special relationship. And we did this thing every summer in the paper. It was just a back and forth, you know, doing a bankroll beatdown every day. And it became pretty popular. I mean, I guess people either hated it or loved it. There was no in between. But Mike was a good character who had no problem laughing at himself. And, you know, he relished the idea of being able to be made fun of, which I did on a daily basis. And those Q&As that I did with him, it's something I would do on a regular basis. And I did a lot of them with horse racing people. I mean, I did one with Baffert, did one with Zito, Dwayne Lucas, Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown. I mean, just about everybody, jockeys too. And, you know, I thank these people for giving me their time. And, you know, covering racing, especially in the mornings, it's not like going to cover baseball or football where you go into a locker room and talk to the players after their games or after a practice. I mean, you're out there in the mornings, they're working. I mean, you have to work around their schedule, and that's one of the things I learned right away. You talk to them when they're ready to talk to you. Unless you're Joe Hirsch, you don't just barge up and say, "I'm ready to talk to you. Let's go." That was one of the things you had to learn, and it's, you have to have a lot of patience to cover horse racing, and I think I've learned that pretty well.
Well, Timmy, there's going to be a lot of people in the Capital Region who are going to miss your articles, your columns, your insight into different things. But in horse racing, we're very blessed that you'll be able to continue covering it. I look forward to when we can travel again, getting back out and seeing you at the races, and you know, looking forward to seeing more great stuff from Tim Wilkin coming up over the next years as we continue to watch you cover racing. But man, congratulations on an unbelievable career. 35 years with the Albany Times-Union is certainly very special, and really appreciate the visit here this morning.
Hey, I appreciate you giving me the time to have this visit, Mike. And I've always enjoyed our time when our paths would cross, and especially when we would be on the airs on Traverse Day. I always have fun doing that, and hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, your spot is already reserved. It wouldn't be Traverse Morning without Tim Wilkin.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but I think it probably would be. But I appreciate the sentiment.
Timmy, listen, I appreciate it, buddy. Have a great holiday, and again, thanks for being here this morning.
Hey, Mike, thank you, and happy holiday to you and yours.
All right, Tim Wilkin, that interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. So cool that he's going to be able to continue covering racing for the Albany Times Union. That's part of his deal as he walks away after 35 years. And, yeah, really does a fantastic job. He's dedicated, and his writing is just so much fun to read. Some great stories there from Tim Wilkin. All right, going to get to a break. When I come back, Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HBPA, talks about some of the issues facing horsemen, in particular an issue regarding the way that some racetracks have started to handle morning training. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Flatter. This prolific son of AP Indy has sired over 100 stakes horses. Recent top runners include Eclipse champion West Coast and Sovereign Award winner Avies Flatter. His yearlings topped the Phasic Tipton July sale 2 years in a row, and his two-year-olds brought up to $600,000. Success on the track, success in the ring. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Introducing racing's newest partnership experience, the Horse and Julep Racing Club. Come see what makes us so different. The inaugural partnership club is forming right now and will purchase yearlings at the Keeneland January sale under the eye of rising star agent Phil Hager. The horses will go to historic Darby Dan Farm, whose land has raised no fewer than 6 Kentucky Derby winners. Partners should plan for a meetup there to visit the farm, the horses, and the best of the bluegrass. Visit horseandjulep.club today to reserve your spot. Horseandjulep.club.
Racing fans, don't miss opening day next Saturday, December 26th, the day after Christmas, at spectacular Santa Anita. Although there is still no public admittance, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Santa Anita will present a total of 6 stakes on opening day, highlighted by the Grade 1 Run Happy Malibu and 2 other Grade 1s, the La Brea at 7 furlongs, and for the first time ever on opening day, the American Oaks at 1¼ miles on turf. Tune in early on opening day as special first post time for a tremendous 11-race card is at 11 a.m. And don't miss track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley as they handicap the opening day races beginning at 10:20 a.m. next Saturday. For additional information, please visit santaanita.com.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Standing here and being honored, I mean, put me in the Hall of Fame in this class is putting my parents in the Hall of Fame. And everything that my father did was never a look at me, never an award for it, but is the definition of a true man. And we're standing up here being celebrated and honored for accomplishments. And this is definitely for you, Dad. Thank you for everything. You've always done for me and putting your family first. Thank you.
That's an emotional Steve Asmussen. as he was inducted into Horse Racing's Hall of Fame in 2016. It was a very special day. We were there providing that coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, that was a special moment for Steve, for his family. And only Dale Baird has more victories in thoroughbred racing than Steve Asmussen. And on December 1st, Steve wrote a piece, an op-ed to the Thoroughbred Daily News, and it involved the issue of racetrack safety, but not in the afternoons, in the mornings when trainers are sending horses out for their morning works and their training sessions. And to help me shed more light on that is Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HPPA. Eric, good morning. Appreciate the visit, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Yeah, I'm very glad, as always, to be invited to get on the show, and just always appreciative of what you do for us, and thanks for having me on.
Well, Steve's piece focused, as I said, much more on the issues of tracks limiting or dictating when a track would close the surface for morning training and basically take a day off. And as we know from reading through this piece and hearing Steve's thoughts on it, that's something that can be detrimental to the training schedules of horses and ultimately the health of horses. So tell me a little bit more about this op-ed that Steve wrote.
Yes, no, I certainly don't want to speak for Steve, but we were able to have some conversations before he put this out there, and getting my opinion or giving him my opinion, I just really am passionate about the same thing he is, and that overall picture of equine health and safety needs to incorporate professional horsemen, trainers, veterinarians that take care of these horses every day. And, you know, that got pinpointed into something very specific for him. And I've had a tremendous number of calls since his op-ed from other trainers that really, again, seeing this short-sighted cost-cutting move that's being portrayed by racetrack ownership, some racetrack ownership groups, it's not healthy for the horse, and it's certainly not allowing trainers to do what is in the best interest of their horse. And I also had numerous calls from owners that, to be honest, had no idea, right? They were not aware that they had policies being dictated. And I think the one thing that I want to make sure is clear, and I think Steve would too, it's not about not giving a horse a day off. I can't imagine there's too many horses out there that don't have a scheduled walk day. But at the end of the day, that needs to be scheduled by the professionals taking care of the horse. I mean, right now we're in a world of scrutiny and doing what's best for the horse. So if you, in essence, handcuff professional trainers and say, we're going to take this day off, and it doesn't matter what your horse's schedule is, that presents a problem to horses. And, you know, being able to you know, then go in and have Dr. Hawk talk about something that I had mentioned to Steve, you know, in my day on the racetrack in Louisiana growing up, when it's hot, we always had issues with horses tying up. I mean, it was it's a problem. I mean, it is. And that was something that I was glad Dr. Hawk agreed with and certainly really drew down on the veterinary aspect. These horses need to get out and exercise. And to have a mandated day that oftentimes doesn't take into account weather. You know, if you have a horse scheduled to breeze on Sunday, the weather's not good, but your mandated day off is Monday, your entire schedule for that horse gets thrown off. So I think it's important that if you really look at the overlying picture of what Steve's trying to convey, it's not just about the day off that's being mandated. It's about the fact that many of these ownership groups are continuing to dictate what they consider safety measures and ultimately not taking into account other opinions such as horsemen, such as veterinarians. And I would venture to say there's several superintendents that are out there that would also, maybe not on the record, but say, you know, a day off for the racetrack sitting idle is not good for the racetrack. So having the ability to work the racetrack is extremely important. I say many, many times, I've said, you know, a racetrack is much like a plant. It is completely affected by the weather. And ultimately, if you're not there to take care of it, something's going to go wrong. And if something goes wrong with the track, we've seen it horrific ways. If something goes wrong with the track, something goes wrong with the safety of our horses.
Well, you know, here's a point that I want to make, Eric. What happens, and I want to ask you a second question here in a minute too, but in terms of a lot of times when we start seeing horses get ready for the Kentucky Derby, trainers will base the final workout or final couple of workouts before the Derby on the weather conditions. And
right.
Say, for example, a track is closed on a Tuesday. Let's just pick a random day. They're closed on right. a Tuesday. That was a day that the trainer was going to have this horse work for any big race. It doesn't have to be the Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they close on Tuesday, so the horse can't go to the track that day. Wednesday, there's a deluge of rain. The track is a sea of slop. The trainer says, okay, I can't train today either. Now you've gone 2 days without getting your workout in, and you have to come back the following day, assuming that the track condition is good, or you're forced to work over that sloppy racetrack, which a lot of trainers don't like to do. Is that really at the core a scenario that could play out that could be very, very detrimental to horses themselves?
Well, if you go one step further with your analogy, or they skip the race, you know, that's,
yeah.
you know, get a racing secretary involved in this, and you talk about horses scratching because they can't do their scheduled workout. What I see is the core of this being the health and welfare of the animal is being able to train each day. But yes, when you're scheduled to go into a particular race, like you said, it could be a graded stake, it could be maiden special weight. If you get thrown off schedule and you're not able to do what is in the best interest of the horse and the trainer's opinion, right? We're entrusting these trainers to take care of the horse, get them to the races, and get them back home in their stall safely. If they're not able to allow their protocols and regimes, they may skip a race. They may have to scratch from the race. They, you know, certainly don't want to necessarily work in the rain or you know, have a horse go over a track that they've determined, you know, before the break, the track's not great. I'm not going to work after the break, you know.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, by the way, using your analogy, wait a minute, the track's closed tomorrow. So that's not even an option. Do you force their hand to make them work? Again, not in the best interest of the horse. So,
right,
you know,
right.
to me, it is a core problem. But also going one step past your example is they may just scratch. You know, if they can't get that work in, if they can't follow their schedule, they may have to scratch and the horse doesn't make the race. And
yeah,
then you got to go,
point,
who knows how long to wait for another one. So
yeah, and at that point, it's bad for the owner. It's bad for the
yeah.
betting public because it's a shorter field. It's
right.
bad for the racetrack because shorter fields don't generate as much handle. It's a whole trickle-down effect, and this is, you know, kind of something that a lot of people didn't even know was going on, myself included. I didn't know so many.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, how many tracks are instituting these policies, Eric?
So I'm not going to get in that political corner right now. We're doing our best to investigate, survey, find out exactly the ownership groups that are putting this mandate together. But there are quite a few. And that's, again, it's actually been a concern before Steve greatly put up his op-ed. It's been a concern. But, again, when you have a Hall of Fame trainer speak out on something like this, then you, again, using a trickle-down terminology, then you start to see, well, wait a minute, I agree with that. And you get a lot more hands raised and you get a lot more heads that pop up and say, as you did, I didn't realize that was going on. And again, I've had owners, friends of mine that called and said, I didn't realize that was even an issue. And it is. But I'm not going to pinpoint the tracks. And Steve and I actually talked about that. We don't want to name tracks. At the end of the day, it's a policy about taking care of the horses, and we want everybody to take care of the horses first. And that's what we've been trying to do with a lot of different fronts.
Yeah, without naming names, there are several tracks instituting a policy such as this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. We have about 4 minutes left, by the way, visiting with Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HBPA. Eric, there was a second op-ed that I want to talk about, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask you about this, so if you're not prepared to talk about it, let me know. But it was called Where Are We Going From Here? And it was from Leroy Gessman, who has been a guest on this program many times. He is the president and chairman of the board of the National HBPA. What is that piece about, and what does that focus on?
Well, thanks for asking. Ultimately, I think everybody knows the situation that we're in right now, the continued struggle with the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. Is it the right thing to do? Is it not the right thing to do? Should there be a federal oversight for horse racing and medication and testing program? But ultimately, this piece from Leroy drew down on the fact that what is it that Americans hate most about politics? The fact that things get pushed through, things get prioritized by elite and money, and ultimately don't have to go through proper procedural protocol. And so when you really look at HISA, the legislation, I think it's pretty obvious that it's been delayed so long. There's a tremendous amount of opposition for it. Not opposition for uniformity, not even necessarily opposition for federal oversight. There is opposition for the way this current bill is structured. So what happens? Money and power get to sneak it in. And so what's going to happen? This bill has never gone through a Senate committee. This bill has never been debated on the Senate floor. This bill has never had a Senate vote. A voice vote, which there were senators promised that would happen. And what's going to happen now, it gets stuffed into a omnibus funding bill that ultimately it's an embarrassment, in my opinion, of American politics and how things can work and not go through the proper procedure. We're all about having things debated. You know, we're the only organization out there that is duly elected board members. You know, they're not chosen, they're not appointed, they're not given a pin to wear on their lapel. They are elected by the members, period. And we want fair democratic debate. And this isn't happening. And this is what Americans dislike most about politics in America, and is happening right in our industry. If the majority speaks, that should be the end of it. And if we're not in the majority, we understand that. We live it on the ARCI level all the time. We make cases. We present our case. We present what we think is the facts. If it's voted down, that's it. We move on. This bill is not even getting that opportunity, money and power, pushing it through on something that's tied to COVID relief when Americans are needing the most. Nobody's going to willfully and certainly vote no against something, and that's what is happening with this bill, most likely.
All right. Where Are We Going From Here by Leroy Gessman. You can read that op-ed. You can read the Steve Asmussen piece as well on the National HBPA website. That's nationalhbpa.com. Eric, man, appreciate the visit. Appreciate you spelling those things out. And happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and the family. And we'll look forward to catching up again soon, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. Happy holidays to you, Michelle, and all your listeners. And, you know, I did want to quickly say I enjoyed listening to Tim. I actually still have that video on my phone of American Pharoah coming down the lane and his description of the roar at Belmont. I even listened to it every once in a while just to give him a pick-me-up. It was something special, so I'm glad he mentioned that.
Yeah, special moment indeed. Eric, appreciate it, bud. Take care.
Talk to you soon.
All right. When I come back, it's our monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon. You'll hear from master distiller Brent Elliott, and then a special Christmas treat for everybody getting ready for Santa's visit in just a few days. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Adena Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home. Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War. Will Take Charge, a final man. Mucho Macho Man.
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop grade one winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred Mucho Unusual all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adena Springs.
Championship Meet is back at Gulfstream Park now through March 28th with live racing Wednesday through Sunday. Thoroughbred stakes action continues with the Grade 1 $3 million Pegasus World Cup on January 23rd, the Grade 3 Holy Bull January 30th, and much more. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with the First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. On-site viewing is still closed to the public, but you can watch the racing action and get more information at GulfstreamPark.com.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Just one more segment before we wrap things up, and this segment includes our monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Brent Elliott is the Master Distiller of the Year for 2019, and this morning you get to know Brent Elliott. Since 1888, Four Roses has been made with the same passion and handcrafted as only they can. And this interview, much like the iconic bourbon, handcrafted by Four Roses. Today I have the privilege of visiting once again with Brent Elliott, who is the master distiller and quality director with Four Roses. What do you remember about that day in 2005 when you first walked through the doors here at Four Roses?
You know, that's actually pretty funny because when I started, the week I started was the week of Bourbon Festival. And I don't know if you've ever been involved in that, but it's basically like the whole industry, and we're still producing in the background, but everyone kind of stops what they're doing, and it becomes, it's like the week where everybody comes to Kentucky just to learn to celebrate bourbon. So really not a lot of work gets done. It's all about showcasing to guests what we do. So like here, we host events on site. We're going to Bardstown to participate in events. It's just a lot of celebration and promotional type stuff. So that was how that was the week I started.
Wow. Could you imagine at that time that you'd be sitting here 13 years later, which let's face it, that's really not that long of a time, and sitting here as the master distiller of Four Roses?
No, yeah, I had no idea. I almost didn't take this job. Actually, it was I was in Tennessee. I had just bought a house, just gotten married, and had a job. My wife had a job. And we came up and we took a tour of Woodford Reserve. We were just up here visiting family one weekend. And I'd grown up in Kentucky. I went to school at UK. So this has always been home. But But I'd been living down there for about 7 years, and I thought, you know, I bet this industry needs chemists. I bet this is something I could do, which is my background. And I actually, that very weekend, I got home Sunday night, got online, and I found this job posted. And went back and forth, came up, interviewed, I was offered the job, and I couldn't decide whether to take it or not. Now, this is 2005. This is before the resurgence and the popularity of bourbon. The only reason I was really interested in it was just because it was an industry that, being from Kentucky, was near and dear to my heart. It was interesting, and it just sounded like something I could, a job that I could enjoy on many levels, not just a paycheck. It was something I could really get passionate about.
Were you a bourbon drinker at that time?
Yes. Uh-huh.
You were? Okay.
Yeah. But what's funny is the first time I tried Four Roses was on my way, I came up for the interview the night before, and on the way, you could only get it in Kentucky at the time. I bought a bottle on the way to the hotel the night before, and I tried it that night, the night before my interview, for the first time. And that was probably as much a factor in my decision to take this job as anything. Just I fell in love with the bourbon. You know, again, this was before the boom in bourbon, but I knew that it was a fantastic product, and as a company, that we would do well because we were just now starting to come back to the United States, and which we have, but I never imagined it would be like this, and I certainly never imagined that I'd be the master distiller. You know, actually, 2015 was when I took over, so 10 short years after that, I had no idea.
And you took over for a gentleman by the name of Jim Rutledge, who was the master distiller here at Four Roses. Tell me about working with Jim and learning from him.
Oh, yeah. He's, if you know anything about bourbon, you know Jim Rutledge. You know that name. An absolute icon in the industry. Probably more passion and dedication than anyone I've met in the industry. It was just, yeah, it was an honor to work with him for the 10 years that I got to. I would say probably the most important thing I learned from him, which I learned so much, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint anything, but without getting technical and boring, probably the most important thing I learned was just how he, kind of what I touched on earlier with, you know, dealing with consumers and people that are curious about the bourbon industry, and he would take all the time in the world to answer, you know, two people if he bumped into them, you know, on the grounds, maybe two guests walking around. You could spend hours just answering their questions. And I think it's part of the same thing. He had that passion, that love, still does, for the brand, for the industry. And, you know, I could just see, you know, how important that was to the guests. You know, from the outside looking and seeing him interact with the consumers, it was just, you know, something to behold. And that's, I've always remembered that and always will.
Do you have a favorite flavor?
I get asked that a lot, and you know, at times I might think I do, and then it'll change the following week. So it's hard to say. I can't even tell you which of the our three standard products is my favorite. It could change by season, by time of day. It because they're all just different. It's just a different flavor for different occasions.
When you think about all the things you've accomplished here in the 13 years you've been here and working as the master distiller since 2015. What are you most proud of?
Right now, probably just because we're growing so quickly, we're expanding. You know, we're in the middle of doubling our capacity. We've just added a new bottling facility. We've just about anything you look at, anywhere in our process, has changed just dramatically in the last, not just 3 years, but last 12 years. And probably the biggest challenge for me this entire time that I've been here, in particular is in my role of director of quality, is maintaining the consistency, making sure that what's coming out of the still or out of the barrel or being put into the bottle, that it is always consistent and it has that same Four Roses characteristic that has gotten us to where we are today, that has put Four Roses on the map. And I think that's, and I kind of feel like the steward of that legacy. You know, maybe, you know, people always say, you know, what do you want to do? How do you want to make your mark? I'm like, you know, I don't even consider that. You know, maybe, you know, someday I'm sure that, you know, I want to experiment, just as anyone would, and other people around here feel the same way. You know, we'll branch out and try something different at some point. But right now, I think what's most important, what I'm most proud of, is maintaining the brand that so many others have worked to build up to get us to where we are now.
Yeah, well, as you said earlier, if you know bourbon, you know the name Jim Rutledge. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that someday when people talk about bourbon, they're going to know the name Brent Elliott as well. So, Brent, I really appreciate it. All of our listeners across the nation now know Brent Elliott and appreciate you spending a little time and us getting to know you here today.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, and again, Brent Elliott, the Master Distiller of the Year in 2019, and you can enjoy Four Roses Bourbon. You can get it just about anywhere. It's fantastic stuff. And my thanks to Brent and the folks at Four Roses for that visit every single month. Going to get to another break. When I come back, a special Christmas treat for everybody, and we'll wrap up this show. I'll have the results from the poll question as well. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
And they're into the stretch with Spun to Run, the wonder catch coming to the eight pole. Spun to Run drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third, but Spun to Run has run away. Gerard Ortiz and Spun to Run, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion Spun to Run. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple greatest stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
And the New York Red is going to win New York's Belmont Stakes, the first leg of the 2020 Triple Crown. Tis the law.
Authentic, tis the law. Here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Don't forget to download a copy of Blood Horse today. You can download Blood Horse Magazine with the Blood Horse Magazine app at the App Store and on Google Play. And don't miss their special going on now that includes a free 2021 Blood Horse calendar. Go to bloodhorse.com/winter special to take advantage of that promotion. Well, I told you that I would wrap up the show with a special holiday treat, a Christmas treat for all of you out there. Years ago, my former partner and mentor, the late Pete Kulis, wrote a poem, and he was exceptional at writing these things. He wrote a poem kind of in the holiday theme, if you will, and so many of you enjoyed it when I played this for you last year, so I'm going to do it again. Here it is, my present to you on this Christmas week edition of the Equine Forum.
The last race was coming. He now had to score. $2 in his pocket, he needed no more. The odds board had flashed. Ah, he had the right one. His horse was named Info at 40-1. He glanced at his program. Could this horse get beat? Not a chance in the world. He had studied the sheet. He reached in his pocket and fingered his ones. $2 to his name, but he had the right one. He went to the window and waited in line. He looked at the racetrack. His horse looked just fine. He called out his number. The man punched it out. That small piece of paper would give cause to shout. He walked to the rail, clutching hope in his hand. The horses parading in front of the stand. The crowd was now milling. The start was now near. He fingered his ticket and trembled with fear. Now the money he'd lost, he could not afford. But Info would win it, and then he'd have scored. His hands had grown sweaty. The start was at hand. When post time was sounded, his legs felt like sand. The field was in line in the green starting gate. His ticket on Info, now a matter of fate. The gates now flew open. The field thundered out. Info on the inside was shuffled about. The horses were flying to the half-mile pole. Info was seventh and looking for a hole. They went to the far turn, the favorite in front. Info lay seventh and far from the front. At the top of the stretch, 'twas the favorite by five. But Info was moving for the long stretch drive. They came to the eighth pole. The favorite had quit. Now Info was fourth, on the outside a bit. As they drove to the wire, they were four horses wide. Info in the middle with a powerful stride. They flashed past the wire, only noses apart. A photo was called for. Not good for the heart. The long wait was torture, for nobody knew who really had won it. But he felt he knew. It had to be Info. His mind filled with fear. If Info had lost it, what more could he fear? The numbers were posted. He stood there aghast. For Info had lost it. The die was now cast. He stood by the rail till all had gone home. Still clutching his ticket, he dared not to roam. A breeze had now risen as he stood there alone, swirling bunches of tickets in the form of a cone. The ticket was crumpled. He clutched it so hard, like a small piece of paper one would find in the yard. He opened the ticket and shouted with glee. With this winning ticket, he gained a reprieve. For rather than Info, he had number 3, a winner, for a whopping 203.
A fun little thing there. Again, my late mentor, my good friend Pete Kulis, was brilliant with a lot of those things, and he put that together, and I thought it would be appropriate to share it with you on this edition of the show, our last edition before Christmas. And next week, you'll hear a Best of 2020 show. And it's some of the best interviews, in my opinion, that we've had on the show throughout the year, including Bobby Flay. Gosh, I can't remember who else I had in there. There's several people, but you're going to enjoy it next Saturday. And make sure you're tuned in for that 8 to 10 Eastern, our post-Christmas edition of the Equine Forum. This morning, I was joined by Ryan and Andrea Gresseth of the Horse and Julep Racing Club to kick off the show. My thanks to them. My thanks to Jimmy Bell from Godolphin for joining me in the first half of the program. Our industry star of the week, Ron Stevens, who you can hear a full one-hour interview with on our trainer talk show that's posted on our website at horseracingradio.net. Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union joined me in the second half of the show, as did Eric Hamelback, the CEO of the National HPPA. My thanks to each of them for making this show possible. Poll question today. It was actually a trivia question in honor of the Los Alamitos Futurity. Asked you two parts of this question. Who is the only horse to win both the Futurity and the Kentucky Derby? A couple of you got it right. Real Quiet did that when he won the Futurity in 97, came back in 98, and the only horse ever to finish unplaced in the Los Al Futurity, come back and win the Kentucky Derby the next year. One right answer, it was Gato del Sol in 1982, who was off the board in the Futurity and then came back and wore the roses. Thanks to everybody who participated in those questions. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to everybody. Be safe. Enjoy this time with family. And my thanks to our HRN family here. Lee Delapina in our Lexington studios. Chauncey for handling all of our social media. Greatly appreciate that. I'm Mike Penna. We're back with you next week on the Equine Forum. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Steelers.